We start hour number two by having a conversation with a senior writer at The Athletic. He previously covered baseball at the Los Angeles Times, the Kansas City Star, and the Star Ledger. We've got a lot to get caught up on with Andy McCullough. Andy, it's good to have you back. How are you, Andy?
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim. How you doing?
Good, good. So take me back to Monday morning, if you don't mind. What was your reaction when you first heard the news of all the positive tests on the Marlins roster?
I mean, it's upsetting to think that I guess reaction is an interesting way of putting it. I mean, like, my initial reaction was just the inevitability of it, right? Like, this was bound to happen at some point. It just happened to occur during the first weekend of the season. I think it's, you know, it's really upsetting to think that at this point now, half of the team's roster has contracted a serious respiratory illness. You know, we don't know the extent of, you know, symptoms that these guys are suffering, but we know that it can be really, really problematic to have this thing, even if you're a young person who's not in the sort of high risk pool. So, I mean, but from a like a baseball perspective, this was going to happen, and that's the inevitability of it. I think was just really deflating for me that there was all this talk about the money and, you know, pro rata, you know, pay and all this sort of stuff, when there never really was a plan put in place that would 100% protect against this. I'm not sure a plan to 100% protect against this is possible if you're going to be flying around the country. But this was going to happen with the way things are set up right now. If you're traveling, you know, through America right now, you are at risk of getting COVID. It's, you know, that's the nature of the beast right now.
Right. I mean, maybe not a foolproof plan, but a plan in and of itself would be pretty nice. As an example, you co-wrote a piece for The Athletic where one player who played in Sunday's Marlins-Phillies game said, quote, "probably shouldn't have played yesterday," end quote. So what do you make of that comment? And then as a follow-up, why did they play a game when the Marlins already had four known positive tests?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think there's a couple things at play here, right? Like, I don't think players should be in charge of these decisions. I don't think it should be up, you know, there should be, like, public health officials who are being, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say that Major League Baseball is acting in concert with public health officials, so I don't want to, you know, say that everyone's doing this on their own. But what I will say is the operations manual for the 2020 season does not have a sort of objective standard that says, okay, once you hit this number of infections, you cannot play today. It's all sort of subjective, and it's kind of in the eye of the beholder. And so the reason they played a game on Sunday was because it was on the schedule on Sunday, and no one stepped in from the Marlins, from the Phillies, from the commissioner's office, from a public health standpoint to say, you guys cannot play. So because, you know, there isn't a sort of break in place that says once you hit, you know, X number of positive tests, you can't play. It's just, you know, there's not an objective measure of it. And so you're going to have situations like this. Now, maybe in the future, if something like this happens, they won't play. But the reason they played is because it was on the schedule, you know, and that's just the nature of trying to conduct this sort of season in the midst of a pandemic. You're going to play games in settings that are, you know, in hindsight, going to look pretty bad.
Look, I agree with you. I mean, that first point about you don't leave it up to the players. I mean, I said the same thing myself, Andy. Of course you don't leave it up to the players. Players play. Players will always vote to play. You can't leave it up to them. And then to your other point about, well, the reason they played is because it was on the schedule. I mean, you're right. But what about this approach? I mean, is there a number of positive tests on one team that could shut down the season? Do we even know? How do they not have an objective standard?
I think, yeah, I mean, I think if you put in an objective standard, then, you know, you reduce the ability, I guess, to be creative or to be flexible or to try and work around it. I mean, look, they're playing this season because they want to make money. There's a lot of money at stake for the owners. There's a lot of money at stake at the players. They have a mutual benefit to try and get to the playoffs and get that extra playoff money there and get the season in the books, you know. So they want to try and play this season, stay as healthy as possible, and just get it over with, get the money, and try and come back next year when it's safer, right? So, yeah, I mean, is there a number of, you know, tests that say you can't play the season? No, there isn't. But as we've seen, just an outbreak with one team had a ripple effect that affected, you know, the Yankees, it affected the Phillies, it's affected the Orioles. The Nationals had a team meeting where they voted and said they didn't want to play in Miami this weekend. So if you have one or two more of these, if you have two outbreaks you know, in teams like one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast in concert, you're talking about potentially, you know, like a quarter to a third of the league having to be shut down because of it. So there isn't a number in place, but it's not hard to see how things could have to shut down completely.
Andy McCullough is joining us. All right, so there's a team official who's quoted in your piece, this is a great quote, as saying, I would rather take the money hit and we all just come back in 2021 with months of planning. This was duct taped together and nobody is following the fake rules anyway, end quote. It's a hell of a statement to me. What do you make of that sentiment?
I think there's a lot of weariness from folks in the league about the sort of, you know, I think just the amount, I mean, this is a logistical nightmare trying to put together this season. And I think it's the sort of thing that even if you gave the league, you know, several, like a full year to try and plan it under these circumstances, like playing in the midst of a pandemic, it's going to be very, very difficult. And I think there's some frustration from, you know, executives who weren't involved in the sort of negotiations between the commissioner, between the owners and the union, who were frustrated that all the dialogue was about the money and there was not enough dialogue about, you know, the frequency of testing, the, you know, eliminating lag in the testing, you know, what are the sort of protocols for, you know, staggering arrivals to come to the ballpark, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, like when you talk about the fake rules, like when you watch these games, guys are high-fiving, guys are spitting, guys are doing all the things that they were said they weren't allowed to do. Every game, every night features guys, you know, breaking these sort of rules. And they're just kind of like eyewash, you know. You can put in all these protocols and all these rules in place that, you know, ask guys to socially distance inside the clubhouse and ask them, you know, to spread out among like the dugout or spread out in the stands. But like the fact of the matter is they're traveling around the country in planes and in buses and I guess in Ubers and taxis when they're on the road. They're traveling around the country and staying in hotels as the country just spirals through the COVID crisis. I mean, we are, it just keeps getting worse. It's not really the fault of the protocols or the fault of the athletes. You know, it's like you can argue about whether the players, you know, they should they, you know, there's been a lot of unsubstantiated reports coming out about what led to the Marlins outbreak. But I think the bigger problem is that you are playing in a country where if you have one false step, you can catch this virus. And that is just a very, very difficult thing to try and pull off logistically when the margin for error is so slim. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Andy McCullough writes for The Athletic. He is a senior writer there. You know, I wonder, like, when the players heard about Red Sox pitcher Eduardo Rodriguez and the heart condition that he's currently dealing with, which is believed to be possibly connected to COVID, you know, I was talking to Dave Roberts about this. These guys think they're bulletproof. Mm-hmm. They're professional athletes, of course, right? What kind of an impact, though, when you see something like that happen to a young professional athlete, one of your own, what kind of an impact do you think that had around or on guys around the league? Any?
I mean, I think you can tell. Did guys opt out and say it was because of Eduardo Rodriguez? I mean, no. I think baseball as a sport asks its participants to have tunnel vision. It asks them to be blinkered. You know, you have to focus on yourself. There's all this talk about, you know, we just need to take care of our business and everything will be fine. You know, we control what we can control, and that's what they focus on. And I think it's very difficult to ask people who are wired to behave in that manner, incentivized to behave in that manner, rewarded with, you know, untold riches for behaving in that manner, and ask them to change the way they think based on this pandemic. So, no, I mean, if you're just asking someone on the street, you know, like, hey, people in your job are getting this, a guy who works in your job got this very serious virus. You know, are you worried about the long-term ramifications if you catch it and go into your job? They'll probably say, oh, wow, yeah, I guess so. The baseball players, they're not, you know, they have to be single-minded, I think. It's how, you know, it's what separates them from everyone who tried to play in high school or college or whatever. And part of it is the mindset. So I don't think there's been a big effect. You know, I think people saw that with Eduardo Rodriguez, said, oh, that's a shame for him. And then, you know, went back to taking batting practice.
Right. All right. So really quickly, before you go, I mentioned that I had Dave Roberts on the program in hour number one. We talked about the incident with Joe Kelly. What did you make of that?
I mean, it was a nice distraction and a reminder of what is interesting about baseball. I thought Dusty Baker did a really good job sort of using the moral high ground he has as being someone who wasn't a member of the 2017 Astros to sort of defend his players and, you know, sort of move the subject past, hey, Joe Kelly's throwing after these guys, you know, for cheating in 2017 and move it towards, we were defending ourselves because Joe Kelly used bad words against us. So I thought it was entertaining. I mean, I don't really support guys getting hit in the head with baseballs, but what did the sport expect? I mean, the Astros players weren't punished. Most of the rest of the industry was really, really upset. And, you know, this is a kind of understandable byproduct, I guess.
Exactly. Last thought, you recently spoke to the great Dr. Harry Edwards, who I've known for a number of years, regarding MLB players who knelt before games during the anthem. What did Dr. Edwards make of that?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to Harry Edwards because I thought, you know, after the sort of weekend of guys doing protests and, you know, all those sort of different gestures, I kind of wanted to have like a historical perspective on it. I wanted someone, you know, I'm 33, so like I haven't seen as much as someone like Dr. Edwards, who's, you know, 77, and someone who's, you know, been around for a lot longer and can sort of contextualize this. And so I just kind of wanted to know, like, what his reaction was. And he had a lot of interesting thoughts. I mean, his main one, and there was, you know, there was sort of like a corporate synergy aspect to this that I found a little unseemly, but also, like, it's hard to know. Like, is it progress to see, you know, Black Lives Matter hung outside the Red Sox stadium, like hung outside Fenway, or is that, you know, like a brand trying to glom on to a movement, you know? And so I was curious, like, what his perspective was. And so what he said was basically like, you know, look, at this point, it's not enough to just say that Black Lives Matter. It's not enough to take a knee. It's about actually changing the issues that are affecting the Black community. You know, it's not enough to just recognize the suffering of folks in those communities, but it's important to actually do something to, you know, change the circumstances. And he was talking about how, you know, it's important to, you know, basically like just not settle for this, you know, to that the struggle continues and that athletes are going to be at the forefront of it, but it's not as simple as just taking a knee for one day. There's more to it than that. So I was appreciative of him for taking the time, because I did want some sort of historical perspective on what was a pretty memorable weekend with regard to all the gestures and stuff.
Yeah, right. So before I let you go, let me follow that up then. If African-Americans make up 8% of the player pool in Major League Baseball, how would you describe how the league, individual teams, and the players have engaged with the cause for social justice? What's your take?
I think there is reason to believe that there's progress. I think there is a benefit to, you know, to having prominent players like Clayton Kershaw and Joey Votto talk about, you know, that Black Lives Matter, you know, to say that they are in the struggle for their teammates, you know, that even if they can't, you know, understand their experiences, they're more willing to listen. I mean, you saw guys like Amir Garrett and Matt Kemp speak out after, you know, Kershaw spoke to The Athletic about, like, you know, how he has become more aware of these issues. And those guys, you know, like Garrett and Kemp, were talking about what it meant to them to hear Kershaw say that. And I do think that has value, but it's not as simple. Again, like, these are just rhetorical things. It's you know, it's nice to hear that. It does feel good in a way, but there has to be more behind it. There has to be work done to increase, you know, Black participation in Major League Baseball, to increase representation among Black people in front offices, you know, in the dugout, in, you know, managerial roles, all those sorts of things. So, the rhetoric is nice, but it has to be backed up with action.
He is a senior writer for The Athletic. He previously covered baseball at the LA Times, the Kansas City Star, and the Star-Ledger. Andy McCullough, my guest. Great job, Andy. Appreciate your thoughts on that. Thank you very much. Let's do it again.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Good job. Well done.